This is Leafs Lunch Playoff Edition with Julia Tesheri and Michael DiStefano on TSN 1050. The playoffs live here.
This is your first game in 18 days after getting surgery on your thumb. Just tell me what you experienced in this game.
I've been waiting for this my whole life, so I figured I'd stop waiting and just try to join the party. So I'm just grateful I'm able to be in this position and, with this group of guys, it couldn't have written a better story. So I'm grateful.
What else, brother? The term gamer, that gets thrown around pretty loosely in the hockey world. People like to say, oh, but he's a gamer. This guy's a gamer. With Nazem Kadri, that term does not get thrown around loosely. He is a gamer. And I played with him a season and a half, and he's been living for this moment his entire life. Everything that has happened to him with the suspensions, with the trade to Toronto, like, even early on, remember early on in his career, like Dallas Eakins saying that he doesn't know how to eat properly, like all these things. But one thing that remained consistent with this guy is when it's time, like it's time to be intense, when it's time to go give it all you got, he loves it, man. He loves it. He thrives on it. The fact that he had to play on so many poor teams in here in Toronto, you probably didn't get to see it as much as you'd like to. And right. Then also, too, it's like he played on all the poor teams, and then it's like, oh, we have a chance now. It's like you almost get a little too overzealous in every situation, and you saw what happened to him. But, man, like for him to put himself what he's gone through, he is a gamer through and through.
I know that we typically look back at, Kadri's suspensions on a negative note, but at the end of the day, that's him just trying to make a play for his team because he cared that much.
He had
that much passion to win. Like, he literally would put his body on line and try and do whatever he could. It ended up crossing the line, right? Like, there's no doubt about it, but it comes from a good place, I guess, of just pure heart and passion and the will to want to win. So when you say he's been building up for this moment his entire life, 100%, I believe that. And, even he said, he's like, look, I wanted to join the party. Like, this may be his only chance to play in a Stanley Cup final. And
exactly.
The fact that 2 weeks after surgery, he's able to get out there and play is just absolutely astounding. His teammate, Andrew Cogliano, had some very profound words on Nazem Kadri coming back to score that OT winner last night.
Yeah, not easy. Like I said this morning, timelines are moved up months, not weeks. So, but you know what? Nas is a gamer. At the end of the day, he's a gamer. He's a guy that thrives in moments like this, and he's exactly the guy you want on your team and in moments like this for in the room and on the ice. So, we did everything. They did everything they can to get him out there, and he looked pretty good to me.
Yeah, pretty good, I'd say.
I would say so too.
So,
look at the we haven't even talked about the goal, but the fact that what he was actually able to do when you break it down, split the D and be able to go like forehand, backhand, shelf, flip it up through
under the stick,
Andrei Vasilevsky, like an unbelievable play for a guy who apparently can't feel his hand and do anything with it. That's a hell of a play, man.
Buddy, there's guys who you give them 10 healthy fingers, they couldn't go under the stick on Sergachev like that. And then Kadri's doing it with the cast and the thumb. And then you think, oh, you got to score on Andrei Vasilevsky. You got to be able to shoot it as hard and as fast, as quick as you can. Well, actually, you just need to be Nazem Kadri and give it the right shot because he was able to do it. So, man, he is such a gamer. And the fact that Andrew Cogliano says that it's months ahead of schedule, not ahead of schedule, but he's moved the timeline up months. I don't know what that entails, man. I couldn't tell you, but I just know that whatever this guy's doing, that's gritty, and he's a gamer, and he's probably playing through quite some pain, and he's probably in a lot of pain today again, but for him, it'll be worth it if he lifts a Stanley Cup. That's for sure.
Oh, 100%, and he'll have that opportunity to do it tomorrow night if they can win it. And I said yesterday, I thought that there was a swing game, and whoever won game four was going to have all the momentum and who I believed would go on to win the Stanley Cup. And at this point, you got to think, man, they only got to win one of the next, four games, I guess, between them and the Lightning. it's going to be a tough slot. I mean, you never want to count out Tampa Bay because they're just...
It's hard to count them out, yeah.
They just don't lose. Like, that's a team who hates to lose, and you can't count them out. But, man, the way that Colorado's flying and the jolt that I think Naz even gives them is quite something. So we'll see what ends up happening in that game tomorrow night. It's going to be great. But it's really nice to see the kind of rehabilitation of Nazem Kadri's image. You know what I mean? Like, a guy who...
Yeah, for sure.
When he was in Toronto, was almost villainized for the suspensions that he took.
And he was villainized, though. But he was villainized, and it's funny because people love to talk about how Toronto needs players in the top six who can hit, and we got into this with Hayes a little bit yesterday. It's like the players who are truly beloved in Toronto: Gilmore, Clark, right? Like, those guys played with that blue collar mentality, and Kadri does the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Another guy who had a little bit of a blue collarness to his game was a man on the line right now. It's Scotty Upshaw, former NHLer and host of the Missing Curfew podcast, which you can find wherever you get your podcast. Scotty, how are you?
I'm doing well, boys. I love the legend comment there. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Well, so, I mean, listen, I played in the league a little bit, and I played with your buddy Loops and Joffrey Lupul, and all you hear around the league is when you get into certain marketplaces, certain towns, you're like, oh yeah, Scotty Upshaw, Obi, and Lupul. Those guys are legends. So
that's right. The three horsemen is what they used to call them.
Oh man. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, that's awesome. But before we kind of get into the controversial call of the game last night, I mean, just like, how annoying is it that the main topic of conversation out of that game isn't the fact that Nazem Kadri returned from an injury and scored the game winner, but instead most of the conversations discussing officiating in a gray area rule book instead?
You know what, guys, I think it was just a little bit of a dark cloud over what I thought was a fantastic game. I thought two teams battled, you know, truly just were battling each other to the point where, you know, Obi and I, we're actually in Denver right now. We caught the game at a Dierks Bentley bar in front of all these Avs fans. And you could just see the fatigue in these guys. And you see the emotion. And they're just pouring every ounce of energy they have left into this game. And, you know, when Kadri comes in and he scores, it's an incredible move. If anyone's ever come down that wing like that and tried to stick your knee out and cut to the net, you know, it's a tough play. And when you get it up over a goalie's shoulder, it's a fantastic goal. And unfortunately, you know, I think Coop and the Lightning staff, obviously you look at the goal, now everyone's going to break frame by frame and look at the deal. It's a hockey play. And to me, do I think it was offside? No. Do I think it was too many men? You could call it either way. But like you guys just said, for Kadri to come back in game four like that, playing hurt, you know, I busted my thumb in the middle of playoffs, could hardly hold my stick for two rounds. It's not easy. What he did was something that'll be remembered for a long, long time here in Colorado, here amongst his peers and the fans here. And he should be very proud of the performance he did last night.
Scotty, I got to play with Naz for about a year and a half here in Toronto, and I just described him like he's the epitome of a gamer. You know, like, he doesn't necessarily, like, when it's game time, you know he's going to be there no matter what, regardless of circumstances. Was there a guy that you ever played with that was like that? Just, you know, that whenever the game gets going and it gets tough, like, he's going to be there and you don't have to worry about him showing up?
Guys, looking back on my career, I played with a lot of great guys. And, you know, Alex Steen was a guy for me, you know, ex-Leaf, a guy that was a heart and soul guy here in St. Louis. Retired with a Stanley Cup, so super proud of him. But you always knew he was going to be a leader and lead by example and say the right things, but not only say it, go out and do it. And just like you said, Kadri, he's a hockey guy. He's a gamer. He's tough.
Yeah.
He knows how to play hurt. He plays both ends of the rink. And he's a guy you follow. He's a guy that plays like Gabriel Landeskog. He complements that team so well. And when Obi and I are laughing last night after having a couple pops, you know, going, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs traded Kadri for Tyson Barrie, and we love Tyson Barrie. Like, Tyson Barrie's one of our best buddies. But look at what Kadri's been doing and the season he's had and the leadership and the toughness he provides for a team. And, you know, it's exactly what Toronto's missing. He is missing it. Yes, he had his flaws in the playoffs with the suspension, but this is a guy that he's put that behind him. He's now got to a level of play that he's never been to, and he's one game away from winning the Stanley Cup. And you know, I'm sure that's gonna give some pretty bitter taste in some Leaf fans' mouths. I'm sure.
Oh yeah, we've been talking about it for weeks here now. But
you know
honestly,
how it is over here.
I sure do. You got the Leaf lens, as your boy Carlo Colaiacovo was saying.
Leaf lens.
Amazing.
Well,
you guys look through those Leaf lenses. Yeah.
Well, maybe sometimes. But honestly, I think most Leaf fans are happy for Naz and, you know, happy about the storybook ending that we kind of saw last night. But from a Tampa perspective, I mean, they feel like they got jobbed last night with that missed too many men call. But do you think this maybe is like the hockey gods getting some payback for like 2004, where I think most people say Calgary probably should have won that cup. Marty's yelling a goal, and I believe that ended up in the back of the net. You can look back to last year against the Islanders. They had a too many men on the ice that went undetected. Is this just payback from the hockey gods?
Guys, hockey's a great sport. We all know that. It's a game we love. It's a game we wake up and play as kids. And, you know, will it ever be perfect? No. You know, is it X's and O's type of match? No, it's guys going out and, you know, it's a game of bullies. It's a game of teammates sticking up for each other. And you know, it's the luck of the draw, too. Look at the two posts, Bo Byram last night almost putting one away. I was sitting with his dad at the time, you know, going, holy crap, this would have been amazing. You know, your son scoring a game winner in overtime and you being here. You know, a post going post wide or a post in determines, you know, the fate of a Stanley Cup champion. It's crazy, but our game's so beautiful. And I just think, you know, Tampa has poured every ounce of energy that these guys have into this series and into this playoff run for a team that's played so much hockey over the years and a team that's so well coached with such great leaders. Look at what Stamkos is doing this year. And it's just, unfortunately, they're just running into a buzzsaw. I mean, Have we ever seen a team like Colorado play hockey like this?
It's
special. If teams looking around the league, you know, every GM and every head coach are watching these games, and you want to build your team around the teams that win, right? Like, how do we build our team next year to be a team like Colorado? How do we draft our new players to become guys like Cale Makar and Bo Byram and this Nichushkin, what he's doing this year? It's hard to make that up. You can't build teams like this. I've never seen a team so fast playing with such energy and committing to blocking shots, you know, and they're doing it with the goalie that truly I don't think is 100% healthy. I think Kemper's dealing with something because he only has to make the saves that he's making. He can't let in bad goals, or that would be the only thing taking down this Colorado Avalanche team. And right now they're one win away from a cup, and I'm glad I'm in Denver right now. Going to experience a great game here on Friday night.
Scotty, I want to ask you if you heard the Big Rig's comments today about how they just have one game to win. Excuse my French. There was a little bit of a colorful language in there, but like, I wonder with this guy, Patty Maroon, like, to rally the team, like, okay, you got Patty Maroon, you got Corey Perry, who could be going to his third consecutive Stanley Cup final and losing. Like, what's the rallying call for the Tampa Bay Lightning right now?
I didn't hear the comment. No, I was actually just watching John Cooper's comments just from this morning's little presser. But listen, Patty Maroon's been there, right, guys? Like, we all know what he brings to the table. He's a gamer. He can score big goals for his team. He does the right things. He stays, for the most part, he stays out of the box, knows his job. He's the cliche of, you know, the fourth one's the hardest one to win. It's a real thing, but you just got to look at Colorado and the team that they put on the ice day after day and the quarterback they have with this Cale Makar. I mean, he truly, to me, is the best hockey player at his age, skating the way he does. For a puck-moving defenseman to be able to quarterback not only power plays, but just to quarterback the whole game. Every time the puck's on a stick, he makes things happen. He's great in his own zone. He makes smart plays. It's a tough team to beat. So, you know, Tampa's got to come into a really crazy barn. It's going to be a difficult situation, which they've been in. And they got to play their best hockey game of the playoffs. And if they don't, you know, they're going to fall short, which I think everyone in the hockey world is going to say, you know, Tampa has done things that might not be matched for a long, long time in this era of hockey, right? Like this modern day hockey, things are so competitive to win two cups, to get to your third Stanley Cup final, and to fall short to a team like Colorado, I still think is you got to be able to tip your cap to those guys.
Scotty, if you said you're in Colorado for Game 5, if the Avalanche end up pulling out the win and closing it out, what's the itinerary looking like for you the next 48 hours?
Oh, God!
Oh, it turns up, boys. Turn the lights out. It's going to be a party here in Denver. And, you know, Shane O'Brien, who I'm with right now, we're actually going to go tee it up with a couple Colorado alumni. You betcha, got my clubs right here beside me. Obi might stay for the whole weekend. I got to get back and see my little girl. I've been away from her for a few days now. So, but Friday night, guys, is going to be a party in Colorado if in fact they hoist that cup. It's been a while, and all year long, you know, the talk has been these guys are Stanley Cup contenders. You know, they're the team to beat, and they've been living up to it, playing incredible hockey. As you guys know, it's so nice to be able to flip on these playoff games and see just the style of hockey and how fast it is and how exciting these games are. It's good for our sport. It's good for all the young kids watching. And I'm excited. There's going to be a few beers put back, boys, Friday night. I'll tell you that.
Oh, I would imagine more than a few, maybe a few dozen or so, I would think, between the boys at Missing Curfew. I really appreciate taking the time, Scotty. Hopefully we can chat again down the road.
Anytime, guys. Enjoy your afternoon.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the game tomorrow night. There he goes.
Thank you.
Scotty Upshaw, former NHLer and host of the Missing Curfew podcast, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts. I think I saw Kerry Fraser is actually joining the show.
And yeah.
I'm sure they'll have something to talk about with a former NHL official based on what we saw happen last night. So you definitely are going to want to go and check out the latest episode of Missing Curfew, and especially if they're in Colorado during the if they end up winning tomorrow night, whoo, is that going to be a doozy of an episode.
Man, those guys floor it. Those guys still floor it. Like, I feel like at one point in my life, I got to the point where I'm like, I feel like I'm done. I'm old. I want to stay inside. And those guys are in their, what, like mid to late 30s, and they're flooring it like they're 20, 21.
Just keeping it going.
It's impressive. It's impressive in its own right.
It is. But like if they win tomorrow night, like that is going to be a party, man. Like that down in Colorado, like you got so many guys out there.
Did you see last night during the broadcast the Colorado outdoor viewing party? It looked like a rave at one point. Did you see that?
So did you mistaken it for your wedding? Is this what you're telling me? Is that what you were looking at?
The wedding was good, but it wasn't quite that. Like that was like thousands of people jumping up and down at the same time. They had the lights going.
Yeah,
like, it looked.
I actually missed it, but I saw your text, you saying like this thing looks like a rave. So I actually missed it, but like all of the NHL arenas are really starting to get on board with this, and it's almost like a tailgate, but like it's different because it's during the game, and it's just these massive watch parties. But you got like the Red Mile in Calgary, and now what you got going on in Tampa and in Colorado. You know, it's not.
Tell
just
me what you think
Maple
about
Square.
This. No, tell me what you think about this. The Thunder Alley in Tampa Bay, does that not look like just a really fun block party to you? Like that that looks like a really good time there. Like, it doesn't look like rowdy. Like I'll be honest, I'm not looking for anything too rowdy at this point in my life, but like that one looks cool. Like people got their chairs, they got the outdoor bars, they're walking around. Like that one looks awesome. Like that's one where I would want to go to for sure.
Yeah, that looks a lot of fun. I mean, I've actually never, I'm trying to think if, I haven't been to either the Maple Leaf Square for a Leaf game, or I haven't even been to.
It's hectic.
It's hectic. Game
like,
either.
I give people credit for going down there and supporting the team because I think it's awesome. You got to show your support, especially when your team's going to the playoffs and doing things that are only done every so often. I don't know when is the next time we're going to see the Raptors win a championship. When have we ever seen the Leafs win a championship? But I lived in Maple Leaf Square, like that building during the Raptors run, and it was rowdy. It was really rowdy.
Imagine.
It was cool. Like, it was cool to see. But if I ever had to like drive in and out of there, it was a bit of a disaster.
I would imagine so. Yeah. Did you see on Instagram last night talking about rowdiness and? Luca Celebre was out in Tampa for game four. He was watching the game, actually, with Andrew Cogliano's brother, apparently. He filmed himself during, like, overtime and actually got himself on tape during the cup or the game-winning goal from Nazem Kadri. And you just see him and Cogliano's brother jumping and screaming and cheering and whatnot. It's hilarious. You might have to get him on tomorrow, potentially.
Woodbridge guy and a Nobleton guy. And, you know, if you grew up in Nobleton, of course you're going to be a big Colorado Avalanche fan. How could you not be? Just the, it's like Vail. It's like Vail, Colorado. You grow up being an Avalanche fan. I never quite understood that. Yeah, Cogliano's from Woodbridge.
This summer, by the way, is he a free agent this summer?
I thought I saw people barking up that tree that like he would want to come home and be the Spezza fill in for the fourth line. And
yeah,
I don't know. I could see it. I wonder if he'd leave money on the table though. I wonder if he would leave money out there to come home. I don't advocate for that really. Like you should make as much as you possibly can throughout your career.
Yeah, but I think he's what, 30? He's in his 30s now. He's probably around mid 30s.
Well, I just saw something that he's played 1,140 regular season games and 114 playoff games, and he's never won the cup. I think he had the Iron Man streak for the longest time. Like that's a pretty big accomplishment. That's a well respected player. So for him to win the cup, that's going to be a big moment. And a well-deserved moment for sure.
100%. And he's been a pretty big part of that team. I mean,
yeah.
What's kind of underrated about this cup final so far is how well the Avalanche, like, special teams have been controlling this cup final. Tampa's got only one power play goal, and Colorado's got a couple of them. So, like, that's been a big discrepancy, and Andrew Cogliano's a big part of that. Like, 35 years old out there, he's got some speed, kills penalties.
Our producer Steph just texting in. Our fearless leader, producer Steph, texting in that he's a UFA and he's 35. So UFA 35, so he probably can sign a lesser deal but put some performance bonuses on it. I don't know how that implicates the cap. But also, Al's brother, the fact that he's 35 and he's still one of the fastest guys on the ice, is that like that impresses me.
That impresses me, man.
You see guys getting to the end of the road and they turn 33, 34, and it's like, oh, he's lost a step. And it's very, very evident.
Tavares is a perfect example of someone who's the legs are starting to go a little bit. I mean, coming into
well, they weren't that great to begin with.
They weren't, but it was something that he worked on, right? Like early in his career, part of his development in New York. And he was never the best skater in the world, but he was an adequate skater. He was a good skater.
Yeah.
And then it has fallen off quite a bit. And this year it was rather noticeable for a large portion of the season. But Cogliano, he's still firing those legs at an elite rate.
Do you think we get a lot of like minor hockey parents listening to this show?
Potentially. I'm sure there's some parents. Yeah, of course.
Okay, so if I could tell them one thing right now, and you have a young kid playing minor hockey, work on skating more than anything else. Because if you talk to an NHL scout, a GM, an agent, anyone who's looking to recruit players to the next level, the conversation ends if he's not a good skater or she's not a good skater. Like that's everything starts there. And then if you're not a good skater, you better be so good at something else to make up for it. So, you know, the people who like to go do a million obstacle courses with their kids every week, 5 days a week, six days a week through. Nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with it. But your base has to be skating. It has to be. If you want to pursue hockey at a higher level, if you just want to go out there and stick handle through cones and have fun, go do that. By all means, but I mean, so much emphasis now is on skating.
No, it's sound advice. I mean, nowadays, if you can't keep up with the pace of the game, you get flushed out pretty quickly. Like that's why it's a young man's game in today's era. I mean, if you don't have the wheels, and that's why Andrew Cogliano's been able to keep up at 35 years old and he's still kicking around. There's not many graybeards still in the NHL like there used to be, right?
It used to have tons of
30-year-olds, mid-30s players back when skating wasn't as prevalent. But now with the speed of the game, the pace, you got to keep up or you're not going to be around the league too long.
Yeah, exactly. And listen, like, you know, I'm like you. I like to be well-researched ahead of all my shows, whether it's radio, Leafs Lunch, Leaf Games, CHL Games. I make the calls and I ask about players and very similar to how you do things. I know the way you operate. And when I'm talking to people about players, the number one thing they'll tell you, if he's a good skater or a bad skater. And if he's a good skater, the conversation can go up from there. And if he's a bad skater, it's like, well, he doesn't skate very well, but, you know, so it's one of those. Yeah.
You're right.
He has to make up for it in other ways.
So
work on skating.
It's funny you mentioned that because we were talking about, Andre Kuzmenko just signed in Vancouver, and I was asking around a couple of people in the league, and I was asking, oh, what's the skinny on this guy? The first thing out of their mouth, well, he's not the best skater, but, and then they had to have a bunch of qualifiers for why he
good
could
luck in the NHL,
still succeed.
Then.
Well, he's got a high IQ. He's an unbelievable passer. He can shoot the puck, but his skating's not elite. It should be passable. Like, he's not an Ilya Mikheyev.
Well, who was the guy?
Burner.
Who was the guy? Gusev. He's not a very good skater.
Exactly.
But he was. So he can pass so well. He's such a smart player. Where'd he go? He went back to St. Petersburg this year. I was playing against him. I didn't play against this Kuzmenko in the KHL this year because I think I had come home before we got to play that team.
Right.
But it's a different. It's hard to compare players coming from.
SKA.
SKA St. Petersburg would be the team name there. But it's hard to compare because that league is so much different compared to the NHL. Like, I would get the puck. I kid you. I would get the puck. I would have time to get the puck, get my head up, process what's happening, think about a couple things, think about what I'm going to eat for dinner tonight, and then I would make a play. Whereas in the NHL, it was like, I got the puck and I'm going to get buried. So it's a different game. They just play it different. They're very conservative. They don't like to forecheck very hard. They keep everything down by the house. And actually, the biggest area where I noticed that too was on the power play. Like, I was playing some power play this year, and I had some time with the puck to do things I never even thought of doing playing in the American League in the NHL. I was walking the line. I'm like, oh, so this is what the good players feel like when they walk the line. This is cool. Yeah, no wonder they like playing so much. No wonder they love the power play. Yeah, I'd like this too. So got a little bit of a taste of that. But it's a different style of game there. I think we got to go to break. Are we going late here?
I think we got to hit a break. I was just checking to see what your stat line was this year when you were with Riga. You ended up playing just the 7 games this year and then left with an injury, but did score a goal. Got yourself a tuck in the KHL. So there you go. Shout out. Was that on the power play, or do you remember the goal?
Yeah, big. I got it for. I'll send it to you.
All right. We'll take a look, and maybe we can break it down tomorrow, and we can break it down the goal and see how. We'll give it a scale, a rating out of 1 to 10. We'll do that for you. But on the other side,
love it, buddy.
We're going to play a little bit of good call. Bad call. I'm Mike DiStefano with Frank Corrado. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
This is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here. It's time for good call.
After reviewing the play, we got a goal.
Or bad call.
So spill it on straight here.
On Leafs Lunch.
All right, Frankie, it's time for some good call, bad call. The way it works, I'm going to make a statement, and we're going to decide as if it's a good call or is it a bad call. Let's get started.
All right, buddy.
Good call, bad call, Frankie. Matthews will win at least 2 or more Hart trophies in his career.
So 2 or more, that's asking a lot. And he scored 60 goals, and he won this year. So you got to think he's going to have to eclipse that. If he's going to want to win again, so you got to think he's got to score 65 or 70 twice. I don't think he can not do it, but I think there's a lot of good players out there. I think he wins one more. I'm going to say bad call, Al's brother. Bad call on that.
I'm going to say good call. Like, I think it's extremely possible that, like, this team could get better. Like, he scored 60 goals in 73 games. There was some COVID nonsense. He got injured midway through. I mean, I truly believe that if he gets a full 82-game healthy career season throughout his career, he could score. He could have 70 goals. He's on pace for it this season if fully healthy, or at least 65, 70 in that range. And if that happens, man, it's tough to not give him that. I'm going to say good call. I think that him McDavid will kind of trade back and forth, and we'll see.
We'll see
Matthews get himself a couple. Oh, I think it'd be fantastic if he could do that, really cement his legacy here in Toronto as you know, one of the best Toronto athletes to kind of ever do it. All right, moving on. Next one here. Good call, bad call. Jack Campbell will sign with a team in the Atlantic Division, but it will not be the Toronto Maple Leafs. good call back.
Did you write this one? This one's spicy. Who wrote this? You or producer Steph?
Steph came up with this.
Oh, this is so spicy. Because you know what tends to happen with players, too, when they sign or get traded? A lot of times you're signing with teams that you play in that division already because they're the GMs or the pro scouts. They see you a lot just from the territory. And I could see that. I could see that happening. So I'm going to say good call, Al's brother.
I'm going to say good call, too, because like a couple of the teams that need goaltending, the Detroit Red Wings who are in the division, the Buffalo Sabres who are in the division, I think there's a couple of squads out there that need and could potentially be front runners. New Jersey also, I think, is a name that I've heard that would have interest in upgrading their goaltending position. Edmonton. You know what? Now I'm kind of thinking I should go opposite and play the field. Maybe I should play the field and go with a bad call.
You had two good candidates in the Atlantic right there.
I know I did, but there's a couple other squads out there, too, that they could throw some money out there and bring him back, reel him in, potentially. I'm gonna go back call. I think that he could end up elsewhere just because I'm going to play the field and play the odds, play the numbers. I mean,
you don't see him as a Buffalo Saber?
I could totally see him as a Buffalo Saber if they have the cap space to do it. So does Detroit.
Right.
But also so does New Jersey, who I know is on a hot pursuit to upgrade their goaltending position. And I know he's a Michigan guy, right? So Detroit would make quite a lot of sense. But I'm going to go bad call and play the odds. Okay. Go with the field.
All right.
Good call, bad call. Both Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren will have played themselves into a top four position by the end of next season.
It's a little bit of a tough one for me because I played with both guys and I really like them as people and as players. But I'm going to say this is bad call, AB, because I would like to think of the Leafs as knocking on the door to a championship. And I just think if you are going to be that team, you're going to need some bigger, rangier, longer guys playing in your top four. So that's why it's bad call for me.
Could you see either of them playing themselves into a top four position?
Perhaps, yeah. I could see maybe one of them. But to say both of them, I'm going to say bad call.
Yeah, I think maybe one of them could. At best case scenario, they both do. Because in order to be a top four, you would think that means that they took that next step and went above and beyond and pushed down the guys who'd be above them in an ideal world. So I guess if you want to live in a positive world, you would hope that that's the case. But I'm with you. I think that'd be asking a lot for both of those players to be in top four roles by the end of next year. But eventually that's the hope, right? That one or both of these guys end up being top four fixtures on this blue line for many years to come.
Yeah, and it'd also be nice, too, if they just grew another 4 inches as well to play in the top four.
Yeah, they could use a little bit of size. I mean, Lilly's got a bit of jam. He showed that throughout this season. He's got some jam.
Well, Rasmus, too, like Sandin does, too. Like, he throws the body around. It's just,
he had, what, one game where I think he threw, what, 10 hits in one game?
It was the Winnipeg game. It was the Winnipeg game. He was driving them nuts. He reverse hit Blake Wheeler into oblivion.
Right.
It was awesome. It was really good.
So
it was a beautiful, beautiful reverse hit.
If that guy can show up more games than not, then, hey, maybe he could end up in a top four position, especially if, you know, we don't want to hope this happens. But, you know, what if Jake Muzzin doesn't return to being the player that we hope he can be, right? And he has to play a limited role. Same with Mark Giordano, who's going to be, I think, 39 when the season starts.
Well, Sandin's the guy for
me. He gets pushed up.
For me, Sandin would be the guy. If you told me I had to pick one that would be in the top four next year, it would be Sandin.
All right. Moving on, next one. Good call, bad call. Well, we talked a little bit about it before, but I want to get your full answer on it, Frankie. The NHL should make all goals reviewable. Good call, bad call.
So I'm going to say bad call right away. Adamant on that bad call. Because
that's a bad call.
Now, okay, so what are you going to say? Like, you're going to review a goal now because you think there was maybe some interference or a little hooking or something on the play that happened. So now we're going to go back and we're going to split hairs on what's a horizontal stick on someone's body mean, or if someone's 8 feet from the bench instead of the 5 feet that's indicated in the rule book. I just think it is what it is. Like, they're the referees, the league, they're going to do their best with the offsides and the goaltender interference, but there's just some things that just, you have to move on and you have to accept that there is some human error in the game, and it's from players and it's from referees as well.
But if that's the case, then, I mean, kind of rid yourself of challenges and reviews entirely. Like, if the point of the challenge and reviews is to get the calls right, why are you sitting here and saying what does and what, like, what can and what can't be challenged? If you want to get the calls right, and that's why you've introduced challenging and reviews, then make them all challengeable. Like last night, for example, I would probably bet you if that was a reviewable call, they would continue playing that hockey game last night, because the rule by rule, within 5 feet of the ice, 5 feet of the bench, that's when you're allowed to go back onto the ice. McKinnon was 40 feet from the bench when
Is it 5 feet? 5 feet when you can go on the ice, or 5 feet when you can take possession of the puck?
I think it's 5 feet from the ice. I believe. Maybe we should look at that. I think.
Well, I just think it can get diluted, man. Like, I don't know. Like, if I'm watching a game and this happens, a goal scored, and then they're going to challenge for too many men on the ice. What if like last night?
So.
Who was it? Was it Craig Button that said that they had seven players? Tampa had seven players on the ice in the exact same situation. So
that wasn't the same situation.
They could get charged. They could get charged with too many men as well. No, last night.
Yeah.
Colorado had the six players. Tampa was on a change too. They had seven players. So does that not matter?
Well, because the seven players, so I've seen that argument thrown out there a lot, but if you watch it, that change was legal. Like, that was a legal change. They were within, you know, the 5 feet mark, it looked like, at least relatively close to it. And then also, they didn't have possession. They weren't involved in the play. So that's a legal line change. You don't literally have to wait until both of the guys' feet are on the bench.
Right, but you see what I'm saying now, right? Like, you see what I'm saying? Once you open that up to the language of the rule book, it becomes very literal.
Yeah, I guess in a way it could get a little bit dicey, but I think that's why I brought up the hash mark thing when we were talking with Craig, and that's somewhat of a way that you can get around it, right? If that guy's blades are touching that hash mark of within 5 feet from the bench, in front of the benches, then you should be golden, right? You should be fine. But if it's not, that kind of takes away the gray area, because that's pretty cut and dry, whether or not the guy's skate is over or behind that hash mark. That could be a way that you could try and do it. Now, whether or not you're going to resurface and put more lines on the ice, I don't know, but that's just one thing you could potentially do. But the rule in the rule book is as follows: at the discretion of the on-ice official, so first of all, at the discretion, which is a gray area in itself, should a substituting player come onto the ice before his teammate is within the five-foot limit of the player's bench, then a bench minor may be assessed. So it doesn't talk about playing the puck. It's just strictly coming onto the ice before your teammate is within 5 feet of the bench, which clearly was the obstruction last night with Nathan McKinnon and Nazem Kadri. And I would think that if that was a reviewable play, that goal would have been called back and they would have continued the game. Now, the right team won. I think we can both admit that. I think Colorado probably should have won that game anyways. But, you know, it's still up for debate, a good discussion about whether or not that should have counted. All right, last one here before we hit a break. Good call, bad call. Cale Makar will score 100 points in a single season at some point in his career. 100 points out of Cale Makar.
100 points, 100% good call. This guy is changing the way defensemen are playing the game. And not changing the way that means, like, people can all of a sudden start playing like Cale Makar, because they can't. You know, he's one of one. But the way this guy is playing the game is so different and so incredible, and I believe he will do it. Roman Josi had, what, 96 points this year? So I think Cale Makar is plenty capable of getting there in an 82-game season.
Yeah, and Makar missed some time. He missed some time, too. So if he has a full 82-game season and he's only 23 years old, like, I mean, this guy still has to grow into what he's going to become. He hasn't reached peak Kale yet. That's the crazy part. No. He hasn't reached peak Kale, and he is, like, on the precipice of doing things that nobody else has ever done.
He's changing the game.
In hockey. It's crazy. He is changing the game. I'm going to say good call as well, though. I think that he does at some point reach the triple-digit market points, and that'll be incredible. My hockey card that day probably will go quite a significant amount, my guy.
Woo! You sell it or you keep it? You keep it or you sell it?
I mean, keep it for now. I'll keep it for now. Yeah. I mean, guy, there's everything in the collectibles market, the stock market, everything's going down. In this economy, it's not a seller's.
Not a prudent business decision right now. Not prudent.
No, not right now. Not right now. All right, let's take a break. Maybe a good call, bad call after dark, potentially. Ooh, but also, there was one specific person who was on the Michael Bunting Calder train with me. I'll let you know who that is and why I feel vindicated for it on the other side. I'm Mike DiStefano with Frank Corradi. Listen to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Matthews has done it again!
Now, back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Welcome back into Leafs Lunch. Mike DiStefano and Frank Corrado with you for a couple more minutes here before Matty Cos takes over with gameplay. Let's get into a little bit of an after dark. Good call, bad call. The last one here for you. Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, Nazem Kadri, Philip Forsberg, and Johnny Gaudreau, the top UFAs this offseason. Good call, bad call. Only one of them will re-sign with their current team.
Ooh, only one. Bad call, AB, and I'll even tell you who my picks are for who ends up back with their teams. I think it's going to be Letang, and I think it's going to be Forsberg that will end up staying with their teams. So, bad call.
Wow. See, you think Malkin's taken off?
I do. I think he's probably going to want too much money.
Interesting. I think I'm going to go with good call as well. The only one that I think re-signs, or I think I'm going to go good call, that'd be bad call, because I think that, I think Malkin and Letang go back. The rest I'm not sure about, but I think they find a way to bring back those two guys and get one more kick at the can. I teased it right as we were going to break for why I feel vindicated, about why I felt so strongly about how Michael Bunting should have been the Calder Trophy winner. Did go to Mo Sider, the Detroit Red Wings. Congratulations, had a great season. But to me, I felt Bunting was the best in terms of, you know, most productive rookie out there this season. And do you know who also gave Michael Bunting a first place Calder vote in the NHL award ballots?
I don't know. Tell me.
The great one, Wayne Gretzky.
Wayne? Come on.
Wayne Gretzky. Myself and Wayne Gretzky have the same wavelength. We basically think hockey the exact same. I feel vindicated.
You.
The great one. Who am I to argue with?
You
Wayne
and the great
Gretzky?
One. No, you can't argue with him. He's the great one. So you Absolutely. Guys are on the same wavelength. You guys think the game the same, you and the great one. Like,
that's
so you
got to
put,
means.
Okay, so if
so.
you're doing banners, you got Messier, you got Gordie Howe, you got Wayne Gretzky, and you have Al's brother. That's some pretty good company.
Yeah, I think, that's just the facts, guy. That's the facts. What do you want me to say? That's what it is. That's what it is. Also,
you can't argue it. That's good, man. It's impressive.
Yeah, well, only seven guys, though, gave him a first-place ballot, which I thought was crazy. But Wayne Gretzky, one of those seven. So it obviously means absolutely nothing. But I bet you Michael Bunting appreciates it if he kind of got that information relayed to him. He probably
that's
think,
cool,
oh,
man. That would be
that's pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool to be a player and know that Wayne Gretzky had you voted on first on his ballot. That's got to be a pretty cool feeling.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, there was one other ballot that left both Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid off their ballots entirely. That's tough. That's a tough look.
I talked about
I'm
it yesterday.
Throw
I can't
him under
talk
the bus.
About it anymore.
Not going to throw the guy under the bus, but that's a tough look. All right, Frankie. Fun show, buds. Thanks
show
for everybody
today,
behind
buddy.
The scenes to get everything up and running. It was a good show. But that's it for us today. If you missed it, you can find it on tsn1050.ca or wherever you get your podcast. I'm Mike DiStefano for Frank Corradi. You'll be listening to Leafs Lunch Gameplay with Matt Cos next.